Set our eyes west, chase the sunset, into wine on my breath, and you got your hand on my hand, lips to my ear, whisper switch to fifth gear. Action, adrenaline, adventure. Welcome, Special Agents to Ride or Die. This is your host, Andrea, and my guest, Nathan.
Hello, hello.
And this is your radio show for all things Alex Rider, the hit spy series by Anthony Horowitz. Okay, so the fic that I am recommending this week is First Impressions, and it is by Valak again, and it's on Archive of Our Own. It's a fix-it fic about Alex's training in the Brecken Beacons, and it has a nod to the Devil in the Deep Blue Sea fic by Pognosis, which we stan. And First Impressions is a single chapter. It's 2.2K. So if you want like a little more K unit in your life, you should go read this fic. And the summary that Valix wrote for it is, Alex meets K unit for the first time, but K unit acts like professionals when something unexpected is thrown at them during selection. It changes more than anyone would expect. So that's my rec. It's really cute. I like it.
It's a good one?
Yeah.
What makes it cute?
Nice seeing Alex interact with people.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want to hurt him.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. And we like K-Unit.
Yeah.
They are some nice people. We got Eagle and Snake.
Actually, I don't know. Fic Universe K-Unit is really great. But I guess Book K-Unit is kind of questionable because they're mean to him.
Yeah, there's not much happening in there. Well, I wouldn't say they're all mean to him. I would say it's just Wolf is just, like, a turd.
And the no, rest of them they're just, all, they all, like, they all called him Double O Nothing, remember?
Yeah.
But Wolf was the only one who was openly hostile to Alex. But the rest, like, they weren't being nice to him. They weren't helping him, but they weren't bullying him.
Anywho.
Today we'll be covering chapters 13, 14, and 15 from Stormbreaker, so strap in. Nathan, are you ready to dive in, metaphorically and literally?
Oh, there's a lot of diving in this chapter. Alex will be in deep water.
Exactly. So, before we get into the chapters this week, let's do a brief recap of what has happened since we left off. Alex was fighting for his life and went back to his room in the Sale Mansion to grab his gadgets and call in for help. But just as he was leaving, Mr. Grin stopped Alex and did some karate on him, and Alex got knocked out. So we've finally hit the Alex's discovered beat in the story, and we are about to go into Stale's devious plan with the Stormbreakers. You ready?
Oh, I'm so excited.
All right, let's jump right in.
This is where the book gets really good.
So. Yeah. So I have chapter 13, The School Bully. And I'm going to start my chapter by reading the first paragraph. Quote, they came for Alex the following morning. He had spent the night handcuffed to a radiator in a small dark room with a single barred window. It might have once been a coal cellar. When Alex opened his eyes, the gray light of the morning was just creeping in. He opened them and closed them again. His head was thumping and the side of his face was swollen where Mr. Grin had hit him. His arms were twisted behind him, and the tendons in his shoulders were on fire. But worse than all this was his sense of failure. It was April 1st, the day the Stormbreakers would be unleashed, and Alex was helpless. He had let down MI6, his uncle, and himself. End quote.
Alex, sad boy, to start this chapter.
Sad boy. I just wanted to, like...
He feels so defeated.
Mm-hmm. And then he wakes up in this, like... It sounds kind of dank place, so... The jig is up for Alex. He's obviously been found out to not be who he is, and it's just like a quiet little moment before everything really starts to pick up again, and we get to sit with Alex's emotions for a little bit, and I'm surprised he's not very nervous about being discovered, but...
I think he's more just frustrated.
Yeah. Alex, I feel like he doesn't really know how much danger he's in, even though Sale has mentioned being, like, ambivalent about Alex dying for something like walking around the house at the wrong time, and
I think Alex thinks he has plot armor in a way.
Maybe, yeah.
The sort of like 14-year-old idea of like invulnerability, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. I think he should be a little bit more worried than he is at this point. And Mr. Grin and some of the guards collect him, and they go up the stairs, and they arrive in the hall where the Judgment Day painting was hanging. So Alex was actually, like, in the Sale Mansion. He was just, like, in the basement somewhere. And they take Alex to the main room, the one with the Man of War, and there is a chair in the middle of the room, and Alex is cuffed to it, and Sale makes a dramatic entrance down the spiral stairs. And there's this cool little line that I'm going to read out. Quote, "They'd always thought Sale had something to hide, but even they had never guessed the truth. He wasn't a friend of England. He was its worst enemy," end quote. I don't know. I thought that was a cool quote.
It's a good line. In the audiobook, it doesn't feel like it has the same oomph as it does in the actual book.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something a little bit different about reading it, because you can play with the spacing of it a little more.
So. You get to choose the drama.
Yeah, exactly. And then Sale has come down the stairs, and he asks Alex who he is, who sent him, and what he knows. Alex plays dumb for a moment, so Sale threatens to have Mr. Grin use some of the knives displayed in the room on Alex. And then this little scene happens, and I will be playing Alex, and Nathan will be playing Sale. Mr. Grin took a step closer. The blade flashed, catching on the light. "My name is Alex Ryder," Alex said.
"Ryder's son?"
"His nephew."
"Who sent you here?"
"The same people who sent him." There was no point lying. It didn't matter anymore. The stakes had become too high.
"MI6?" Sale laughed without any sign of humor. "They sent a 14-year-old boy to do their dirty work? Not very English, I'd have to say. Not cricket, what?" He had adopted an exaggerated English accent. Now he walked forward and sat down behind the desk. "And what of my third question, Alex? How much have you found out?"
Alex shrugged, trying to look casual, to hide the fear he was really feeling. "I know enough," he said.
"Go on."
Alex took a breath. Behind him, the jellyfish drifted past like a poisonous cloud. He could see it out of the corner of his eye. He tugged at the handcuffs, wondering if it was possible to break the chair. There was a sudden flash, and the knife that Mr. Grin had been holding was suddenly quivering in the back of the chair, an inch from his head. The edge of the blade actually nicked the skin of his neck. He felt a trickle of blood slide down over his collar.
"You're keeping us all waiting," Harrod Sale said.
"All right. When my uncle was here, he became interested in viruses. He asked about them at the local library. I thought he was talking about computer viruses, but I was wrong. I saw what you were doing last night. You've gotten hold of some sort of real virus. It came here in test tubes, packed up in silver boxes, and you put them into the Stormbreakers. I don't know what happens next. I suppose when the computers are turned on, people die. They're in schools, so it'll be school children. Which means that you're not the saint everyone thinks you are, Mr. Sale. A mass murderer. A blitty psycho, I suppose you might say." End scene.
Ooh! We find out that Sale is a bad, bad man.
He is. Thoughts and feelings. I thought that was just a good summary of, like, what's happened.
So. Yeah. It kind of just is the culmination point of everything. It is the confrontation moment. It is the discovery moment. It is where Alex kind of is forced to realize the calamity of the moment. That's it. That's a good.
Well, and I guess also there's that. Like that hint of real danger. Like you were talking about how Alex thinks he has plot armor, but then like Grin throws a knife at him and it gets really close to hitting him and he actually draws blood. So.
Yeah, that is. There's a lot to unpack, but even more soon.
Yeah, and I think Alex is really kind of showing his courage because, you know, he was just showed that they would consider killing him, and he was like, "I don't care, I'm going to call you a psycho.
I'm going to call you a dummy. A
pop-off king." So now that Alex has revealed the how, Sale decides to talk about the why, and he reveals that in his past, when he was at school, he was bullied, and the Prime Minister was his main bully, and he claims that the bullying has continued now, even though he is rich and famous. He actually says it's appropriate that MI6 would send a child because he hates British school children, so now he naturally needs to kill all the school children in London, because logic. Sale has this talk, for no joke, like more than 2 pages, and it's far too long, so I've summarized it the best I can. And Alex interjects by telling Sale that lots of people are bullied And Sale actually, like, backhands him and hits him. And Sale presses a button, and a panel slides up, revealing TV screens with camera feed from all over Sale Enterprises. And Alex is like, oh, that's how they found me so quickly. So the virus in the Stormbreaker is actually a modified smallpox. And when the Prime Minister pushes the button and it puts all the computers online, the virus will be released and all of the school children will be dead by midnight. And, quote, the Prime Minister will weep as he remembers the day he first bullied Herod Sale, end quote. And Alex is like, by midnight tonight, you will be in jail.
Yeah.
So, nice clap back, King.
There's one thing I wanted to say about this little section, which I thought was interesting, is this seems like the most, like, cartoon moment of the entire show, the entire book, which is just like, ah,
incredibly
I caught you.
Petty.
Yeah, well, it's also like, ah, I caught you. Before I kill you, let me tell you everything.
Yeah.
Instead of just, like, killing him.
Unfortunately, that's a trope that's gonna, like, remain in the rest of the Alex Rider books, so get used to that. Especially because I've read Snakehead pretty consistently. It's really bad in Snakehead.
Okay.
Like, he's like, I've caught you, and I'm going to kill you, so I will tell you my master plan.
Oh, man.
It happens all the time. I guess when you don't really have anyone to talk to about your crazy things that you invest too much time in, you have to tell someone.
I guess I never thought about that. Maybe these, like, crazy people get kind of lonely.
They do be kind of lonely. I bet Herod Sale just needs someone to talk to. Maybe a therapist.
That would be a good place to start, especially with the bullying.
Yeah. So, Herod mentions that he was not alone, and Alex is like, yeah, you had Yasin Grigorovich. And Sale is surprised that Alex actually knows the name. And he says, quote, Yasin is working for the people who have been helping me. Let's not mention any names or even nationalities. Now you know the truth. I'm glad I was able to tell you, Alex. You have no idea how much I hate you. Even when we were playing that stupid game of snooker, I was thinking how much pleasure it would give me to kill you. You're just like the boys I was at school with. Nothing has changed. End quote.
But then Alex snaps back. You haven't changed.
He does. And he tells Sale that he's, like, pathetic for holding this grudge for, like, 40 years. And Alex tries to bluff Sale, but it doesn't work. And Sale is going to be leaving Alex in the hands of Mr. Grin and Nadia Vol to dispose of him. And I'll close out my chapter with the last few lines. Quote, goodbye, Alex. It wasn't a pleasure knowing you, but enjoy your death. And remember, you're only going to be the first. The door swung shut. Handcuffed to the chair with a jellyfish floating silently behind him, Alex was left alone. End quote. End chapter.
Ooh. The big weight of this chapter is you find out the motive of it all. And also that he is trying to wiping out all the school children.
It's very petty.
Yeah.
It's really contrived. And, well, okay. When we think about the organization he's being helped by, because I know what the organization is, you don't. It sort of makes sense, but not really. He just says, like, people think England is a bad country, so terrorist organizations, I guess, or nefarious organizations would want to inflict as much damage as they can on the country. Killing a bunch of children would do that, so I don't know. It's kind of flimsy, but it's like, it puts Alex in immediate danger, and it puts the people who would be reading this book in danger, so like, oh my god, you know, what's happening?
So, even if Herod Sale isn't the most, like, strong character, it does add a lot for Alex.
Yeah.
So
he's definitely a plot device, but, you know, it works for the first book, and to a certain degree, Horowitz gets better at writing villains, especially because, you know, they're villains for kids, they don't need to be incredibly complicated or anything like that.
So. Yeah, and this is a villain that I think a lot of kids wouldn't understand because they're like, I'm in school right now and I get bullied.
Yeah.
So they're like, ah, I feel you, Herod. You know?
Yeah, I guess true. Some people would sympathize with Herod and be like, I kind of know where you're coming from. But then they would also be kind of on Alex's side and be like, just because you're bullied doesn't mean you need to kill a whole bunch of children.
Yeah.
So.
Because then at that point, they're also the children. So they're like, man, I'm getting bullied and I'm going to die? Those are the worst of both worlds.
Yeah, exactly. So. Good chapter. Solid.
long jog on pub went out creeping out to the bottom through the hay. Young lovers and they are not sleeping. Young lovers in the hay. When this gun turned on pub went out creeping out to the bottom through the hay.
To KHDX.FM in Conway, Arkansas.
Alrighty, we are starting now. Chapter 14, Deep Water. So, there's a lot to unpack after the last chapter, but Alex, we start in the chapter with Alex sitting here trying to break free from his little chair, but after a while, he kind of gave up, and he was, his arms and or his wrists were bruised and bloody, and Mr. Grin had left for a little while. He'd been gone. And Alex was sitting here really frustrated. He could feel the zit cream in his pocket, which the zit cream, from what we remember, was the cream that could burn through any metal. And so Alex was really frustrated because he could feel it in his pocket and know he could get out of these handcuffs, but couldn't reach it. And so from there, Alex hears a helicopter take off and knew that Herod Sale must be on his way to London. And here is where Alex reiterates, the millionaire was completely insane. What was he planning? What he was planning was beyond belief, a mass murder that would destroy Britain for generations to come. So Alex was sitting here, both incredibly frustrated he couldn't get out of the chair, and also just having to watch the entire thing unfold, now with all the knowledge. It did not work well for him. So moving into that, there's a moment that happens almost immediately after that's really important. And so we're going to do a scene real quick, and Andrea will play Nadia, and I will be Alex. So, the door opened, Alex twisted around, expecting to see Mr. Grin, but it was Nadia Vole who hurried in, closing the door behind her. Her pale, round face seemed flushed. Her eyes, behind the glasses, were afraid. She came over to him.
Alex.
What do you want? Alex recoiled away from her as she leaned over him. There was a click, and to his astonishment, his hands came free. She had unlocked his handcuffs. He stood up, wondering what was going on.
Listen to me, Vole said. The words were tumbling quickly and softly out of her yellow-painted lips. We do not have much time. I'm here to help you. I worked with your uncle, Herr Ryder. Alex stared at her in surprise. Yes, I'm on the same side as you.
But nobody told me.
It was better for you not to know.
But Alex was confused. I saw you with the submarine. You knew what Sale was doing.
There was nothing I could do. Not then. It's too hard for me to explain. We don't have time to argue. You want to stop him or no?
I need to find a phone.
All the phones in the house are coded. You cannot use them, but I have a mobile in my office.
Then let's go. Alex was still suspicious. If Nadia Vole had known so much, why hadn't she stopped Sale before? On the other hand, she had released him, and Mr. Grin would be back any minute. He had no choice but to trust her. He followed her out of the room, around the corner and up a flight of stairs to a landing with a statue of a naked woman, some Greek goddess. In the corner, Vol paused for a moment, resting her hand on the statue's arm. "What is it?" Alex asked.
"I feel dizzy. You go on. It's the first door on the left." Alex went past her, along the landing. Out of the corner of his eyes, he saw her press down on the statue's arm. The arm moved. A lever. But by the time he knew he had been tricked, it was too late. He yelled out as the floor underneath him swung around on a hidden pivot. He tried to stop himself falling, but there was nothing he could do. He crashed onto his back and slid down through the floor and into a black plastic tunnel, which corkscrewed beneath him. As he went, he heard Nadia Vol laugh triumphantly, and then he was gone, desperately trying to find a hold on the sides, wondering what would be at the end of his fall. 5 seconds later, he found out. The corkscrew spat him out. He fell briefly through the air and splashed into cold water. For a moment he was blinded, fighting for air. Then he rose to the surface and found himself in a huge glass tank filled with water and rocks. That was when he realized, with horror, exactly where he was. Vol had deposited him in the tank with the giant jellyfish, Herod Sale's Portuguese man of war.
Ooh.
End quotes.
That seems like one of the most miserable ways to go.
Whoa. It's, yeah.
There's a lot to unpack here. So, some of the things that I thought was really funny was Nadia's laugh triumphantly, like the villain that she is.
She has an evil villain laugh.
And then Alex falling for
five seconds.
That's a long fall.
It's like corkscrewing down and then depositing him.
Like a nice little water slide.
I don't know if I would say it's nice, but...
I mean, maybe while it's happening, not so bad. But
I think it would be really disorienting, because, like, suddenly you're spinning around.
Yeah, he was freaking out for a little bit.
I think it's so... I don't know if I would say cheap, but, like, the arm is a lever. It's so tacky. You know, but Herod Sale is a tacky man, so...
It fits his character really well. So... From there, Alex has stumbled into the tank. He freaks out for a moment. He's like, oh my god, I got really lucky. I didn't crash into the man of war. And he realized the jellyfish has no eyes. It's just kind of floating around. So Alex has time. He has time to think, but not a ton of time. So he knew eventually it would reach him, but with the tank being as big as it was, he could swim around a bit. He could dodge it for a bit. He just had to be really careful. And so while he was... in the tank, he sees two figures walk in. Alex could barely make them out, but he knew who they were. Vol and Mr. Grin. They stood together in the front of the tank. Vol was holding what looked like a mobile telephone in her hand. And she says, "I hope you can hear me, Alex." The German woman's voice rang out from the speaker somewhere above his head. "I am sure you will have seen by now that there's no way out of the tank. You can only tread water for maybe 1, maybe 2 hours. And from there, we hear that the record is 5.5 hours for how long someone has made it. So that means they have not only used this trick once, they've used it multiple times. Yes. And from here, Nadia says, "Or perhaps it'll be faster and you will drift into the embrace of our friend. You see him, no? It's not an embrace to be desired. It will kill you. The pain, I think, will be beyond the imagination of a child. It is a pity, Alex Ryder, that MI6 chose to send you here. They will not be seeing you again."
Cold-blooded.
Ooh, she's Dang. So vicious.
She is. What Man. Happened? She hates children.
I don't know
I
how.
I think Alex is kind of a menace, though. So like,
yeah, I mean, Alex can be a bit of a turd sometimes, but I don't understand how Herod Sale was able to accrue a group of people who all just so viciously hated children that they enjoyed seeing them die.
Well, okay. I don't want to get into too deep into, like, psychology weeds and stuff, but it's, like, especially with obedience, you can get people to do really horrific things. If you're a person in a position of authority and you're like, "Do it because I say."
Yeah.
It's really surprising
especially
how
really
far people would go, but, yeah.
Yeah, especially if they really look up to Herod Sale. They're like, "This person is my lord. I love this person."
Yeah.
You know? And they're like, "Herod Sale can do no wrong." Second, this one little thing, but we'll help him out with that thing because the rest of the things are good, you know. If they like his overall mission, then they may be okay with this one. But from there, Nadia clicks off her little speaker thing, and Alex just kind of kicks around the water for a little bit. He realizes Mr. Grin left, but Nadia decides to stick around. Nadia kind of is really interested in the death of Alex. So,
Alex... I mean, he's already avoided them killing him, so she's probably just sticking around to make sure he actually dies.
Just wants that guarantee of seeing it happen.
Yeah.
So, Alex sits here and, well, doesn't sit, he swims around for a bit, kicking around, trying to make sure he doesn't touch the jellyfish, and he realized that if the jellyfish didn't get him, what Nadia said was true, that tiredness would. He would drown, he would not make it. And so, he had to fight for every second to stay afloat, and this is where he started to get really panicky. We have learned quickly that Alex doesn't like water. And so he keeps getting put into positions where he has to face water. So he doesn't like it. And he could see Nadia watching. Although she was a blur to him, he would be crystal clear to her. So Alex swims down to the bottom and is like, man, I'm going to do something creative. I'm going to grab some rocks. We're going to break this glass. But they thought ahead. And what did they do? They put these rocks in concrete. And so Nadia just kind of stood there and watched. And Alex knew with kind of dread. And she'd been expecting this whole time. So he realized at the last second that the jellyfish had drifted above him. He screamed, bubbles got into his mouth, and he had to just, like, contort his body in a strange way to make sure that he didn't get death, basically.
Yeah, it says the tentacles were, like, right above his head, so he barely missed it.
Barely snuck out. And so with him not being able to break the glass, him not being able to climb out, because the only thing above the tank were these neon light strips that were hanging up, and they were way too far out of reach for him to reach. So he couldn't climb out, he couldn't break the glass, and he can't avoid touching the jellyfish forever. So he sat here, and he's like, man, what can I do? What can I do? And he realized all the gadgets that Smithers had given him. And none of them could help him, aside from one. And this one is one that he had been really frustrated with earlier. It was the Zit Cream. The Zit Cream comes back to help out again. And so, this is another moment, which I thought was really interesting, that we always talk about how Anthony Horowitz likes to really over-elaborate things for no reason. When he elaborated on his tank, the tank was an engineering marvel. Alex had no idea how much pressure the water was exerting on the huge plates of glass, but the one thing that held it all together was this framework of iron girders that fitted around the corners on both the inside and outside of the glass. The faces held together by these series of rivets. While I understand the setup for what's about to happen, it's always so interesting how he just will spend an entire paragraph talking about the shape.
It could be worse. He could be talking about trees for 8 pages.
That is true. But the Zit Cream had the phrase on the side, for healthier skin. And so if Nadia was sitting here watching him, she'd think Alex went absolutely nuts. Like, that the jellyfish might have hit him, but not bad enough to, like, knock him out. So it's like, super confused. But Alex sits here and is like, I don't know if this thing will work underwater, and I don't know if I have enough or whatever, but he's like, I'm gonna give it a try. And so what does he do? He gives it a try. He puts it on his hands and rubs it on the metal, which when I first read this, I kind of forgot that
it's safe for skin.
Yeah. And yeah. So I was just like, oh my god, Alex, what? Why would you do that? That is, if it can melt metal, what can it do to your hand? But apparently nothing. And so from there, he puts it on the metal. And he kicks around for a minute, and Nadia starts to become aware that, like, something's not right. Why did this man, or this boy, pull out Zit Cream and then rub it on the metal rivets inside of the tank? It's just, like, unusual. And so she's like, maybe we should do something about that. But she picked up her phone and started speaking into it, perhaps calling for help. But Alex had already used half the tube on one side of the tank and the other half on the other. And now the jellyfish was right above him. So he couldn't swim back up, and he just had to hope that this worked, or he was going to drown or go right into the jellyfish. So he sat here, and something that was interesting is it says he just had time to take one breath before he found out. But he wasn't able to swim up because the jellyfish was there, so I don't know where he took that breath from. But regardless, even underwater, the cream had burned through the rivets, and the side of the tank blew off. And so instantly, Alex is flung out of the tank, and after a second, he stands up, he's bruised, he's dazed, and he's like, wait, where'd the jellyfish go? What happened? And so Alex looks around the room, kind of collects himself, and he found the jellyfish. So, our antagonist here, Nadia Vole, was not as lucky as Alex was, and gave a grand old bear hug to this man of war, who, yeah, that did not treat her well. She was talking about how awful of a death Alex would have, not realizing she was telling her own fortune. So, Alex looked at this, saw the, like, body of Nadia just hugging the jellyfish and was like...
He sees her visage.
Yeah, and he is just like,
oh God.
He's like, I'm about to puke. I feel sick. So he steps away, and he realizes now that, you know, he's kind of starting to collect himself again, that the alarms had gone off, and that the chapter ends with this little section. The screaming of the siren took him out of his dazed state. What time was it? Almost 11 o'clock? At least his watch was still working. But he was in Cornwall, at least a 5-hour drive from London, and with alarms sounding, the armed guards, and the razor wire, he'd never be able to make it out of the complex. Find a telephone? No, Nadia was probably right in telling the truth, or Nadia was probably telling the truth when she said that they were blocked. And anyway, how could he get in touch with Alan Blunt or Mrs. Jones at this late stage? They'd already be at the Science Museum. Just an hour left. Outside, over the dim of the alarms, Alex heard another sound. The sputter. The roar of a propeller. He went over to the nearest window and looked out. Sure enough, the cargo plane that had been there when he arrived was just about to take off. Alex was soaking wet, battered, and almost exhausted, but he knew what he had to do. He spun around and began to run.
Ooh. End chapter.
Alex, once again, not only dodges death, but accidentally kills Nadia.
Yeah.
So, rest in peace, Nadia.
You were a real one, not really, but yeah.
Created some weird moments, like finding Alex in a dark, like, mine, or a coal mine. pulling him back like a mother with a disobedient child in Walmart. And, yeah. Not much else about Nadia.
I don't know. I think I like looking at Alex's psyche. Mm-hmm. And so, like, reading about how he's, like, kind of in a daze and feeling sick after what he just saw, I'm like, that sweet, sweet trauma, that disassociation.
The psychology major, you'd be popping out right now.
Yeah, I guess. And also, I don't know if they really focus on it a lot in the books, but it is pretty, you know, like, damaging to your health when you're, like, killing people when you're 14. So they do seem to be focusing on that aspect a little bit more in the TV show, so I'm like, good on you, TV show.
Yeah, Alex's resilience, at least in the books, to, like, trauma is interesting, because...
So I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's pretty okay in the first and second books, and then by the end of the third book, Alex is like, oh no!
It all just kind of culminates?
A little bit, yeah. And then especially, like, at the end of the series, well, the end of the series, when Scorpio Rising finishes, Alex is kind of like, oh, my life sucks.
Yeah.
So.
Because, see, what we have right now, at least, is within just a few weeks, or maybe like a month of the book timeline, his uncle had died, he just saw Nadia die, he's, like, basically kicked out of the school at this point, he went through this, like, really intense training.
He's been blackmailed by his government.
Yeah.
He had... You know, they threatened to take away his mother figure, basically.
He just found out that, like, almost all the children in England are about to die.
He found out that his, like, uncle, the person who he thought his uncle was, never existed. His uncle was never a banker, so...
His entire life is just, like, everything he knew...
Has turned upside down, you know?
Yeah, and we don't even know what happened to his little housekeeping lady.
Yeah, and honestly, as far as we know... Alex doesn't have any friends at school. Like, they don't mention any friends. So, and, like, we'll talk about friends in the next book, because I think Tom shows up in the next book or the book after that. But
yeah, but for right now, Alex, a lot of emotional baggage. Yeah. No real way to release it, so.
Poor kid, but, you know, he's got to keep chug-a-luggin', so.
And that's a good way to end this chapter. Chug-a-luggin'. We'll be right back.
listening to KHDX.FM in Conway, Arkansas.
All right, chapter 15 is 11 o'clock, and my chapter kicks off with Alex bursting out of the sale house, and quote, he was aware of alarms ringing, guards running toward him, and two cars, still some distance away, tearing up the main drive, heading to the house. They shouldn't be looking for him. At least, not yet. End quote. So, the whole place is hustling and bustling because they've got 1 hour to go time. And Alex notices that Sale's helicopter's gone already, and that means that only leaves the cargo plane, which is about to take flight and is Alex's only option to get to the Space Museum. But the plane is getting ready to roll down the runway, so Alex has like 2 minutes to figure out how to get on this thing. And he takes a look around and sees an open-topped army jeep nearby being attended by a guard who isn't looking in Alex's direction. Alex has grabbed one of the harpoon guns from Sale's main room for no reason. Alex considers using it on the guard, but, quote, Alex knew he couldn't do it. Whatever Alan Blunt and MI6 wanted him to turn into, he wasn't ready to shoot in cold blood. Not for his country, not even to save his own life. End quote. I think this is kind of a big deal quote about the integrity of Alex's character, especially as the series goes on and he does try to keep from turning into whatever it is MI6 wants him to be. It's big. So I wanted to point it out. Do you have any thoughts?
It's a lot about his morality, you know, what he values and what he doesn't. And even at 14, he is able to understand the value of life, which is something that he looks around and these adults don't have.
Yeah.
Which I think is nifty. Also, the harpoon gun, big brain in the moment. Also, it's probably really intimidating to look at a kid holding a harpoon gun.
I imagine this thing is probably half Alex's size.
Yeah, exactly. And so, if anyone wanted to mess with him, they just, like, if I was giving him a death look holding a harpoon gun,
I would be a little scared.
I'd turn around. I'd be like, nope.
Yeah, I'm not dealing with this kid. He can take my Jeep anytime.
Yeah.
So, I also wanted to mention, like, in Devil in the Deep Blue Sea, sorry to bring it up, Alex kind of has the same, like, stick to my morals, ideals that quickly gets whittled away as Alex continues to work in the real world for, like, less than savory people. So, I don't know. I thought it's an interesting character note that Alex really is very stubborn about his morals when he wants to be.
I'm glad that's consistent.
It is, yeah. So. It's something people try to keep consistent to his character. It's one of the few consistencies in his characters, like, throughout the books.
Yeah.
So it's, like, something you gotta make sure you get right.
Mm-hmm.
So, back to the Jeep, the guard sees Alex coming, but by the time he does, Alex is close enough to just, like, whack the guy with the harpoon gun, and he gets in the Jeep and drives away. And Alex actually knows how to drive, because Ian started teaching him when he was tall enough to touch the pedals. And the Jeeps from the main drive are starting to close in on Alex, and the plane is heading to the runway, so time is running out. I can't explain geographically what's going on.
Yeah.
So we're just going to trust Anthony Horowitz on this one. And I have a quote. Maybe it was the danger closing in from all sides that had sharpened his senses. Maybe it was his close escape from the dangers before. But Alex didn't even have to think. He knew what to do, and as if he had done it a dozen times before. Maybe the training he had been given had been more effective than he'd thought. He reached into his pocket and took out the yo-yo that Smithers had given him. There was a metal stud on the belt he was wearing, and he slammed the yo-yo against it, feeling it click into place as it had been designed to do. Then, as quickly as he could, he tied the end of the nylon cord around the bolt of the harpoon. Finally, he tucked the pistol he had taken from the guard into the back of his trousers. He was ready. End quote. I don't know. It's this cool little moment where Alex, like, comes into himself and shows this innate ability to, like, think quickly and creatively under pressure.
There's a lot of not only ingenuity there, but sort of as you mentioned of, like, him realizing himself, it seemed so easy for him.
Yeah. I'm definitely one of those, like, I freeze under pressure and stuff like that. So Alex just
like
being like
goats.
Alex is immediately like, schwa, I'm making this thing that will help me in a few pages. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really cool. And a good, cool Alex quote. To anyway, we have this plane going down the runway. I think Alex is driving up to meet it at some point. He's not on the runway just yet when he hears machine guns and ducks in time for the windshield to explode. So the two cars Alex had seen when he had taken the Jeep have turned around and are now coming up behind him. And there are gunmen in the back seat of each of the Jeeps, and they are firing on Alex.
One thing I want to say real quick.
Mm-hmm.
The description of how or what happened to the car is eerily similar to what happened to Ian's car.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
It's so similar.
They say the windshield is broken, and they say that there are, like, bullets in the side of the car.
Yeah.
Oh my god, wait, that's so cool.
But then we learn.
Thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah. And then we learn about Yasin later, and we've been sitting here with this, like, big confusion of, like, how could this happen? Maybe because that's not actually what happened.
Shut up.
Okay.
Because we can't talk about that yet. Well, I promise we'll talk about that in the next episode.
Okay, yes,
I promise.
Yes.
Because that goes into my, like,
yep.
That goes into my theory about, like, Yasin and MI6.
So let's make a note of this section right here.
Yes. Thank you so much for bringing that
up. I'm putting a star beside it.
Yes. That's great. Oh, my God. Fantastic. Thank you for pointing that out. So the cars catch up really quickly, and Alex is caught between the two, and he realizes they're going to shoot him from there, inches away from him. So what does Alex do? Well, he slams his foot on the brake, and he hears the machine guns go off, and one of the cars veers off and hits a tree, and the other one stops, turns around, and goes after Alex again. And Alex sees the plane is not on the runway, so Alex gets to the tarmac as fast as he can, but the Jeep is only going 70 miles per hour, and he sees right ahead of him more cars on the runway, and they have guns and a clear shot. So Alex does his thing and gets the Jeep behind the plane. I don't really know what, like, airfields and tarmacs look like, so I have no idea how Alex does this, but I will trust the author. And Alex is behind the plane now, so he was like intercepting the plane from the side, but anyway, the plane is between him and these new guys in these cars. And I have a quote, Alex saw the front wheel separate itself from the runway. He glanced in his mirror. The car that had chased him from the house was right on his tail. He had nowhere left to go. One car behind him, two more ahead. The plane was now in the air and the back wheels lifting off. The guards taking aim. Everything at 70 miles an hour. Alex let go of the steering wheel, grabbed the harpoon gun, and fired. The harpoon flashed through the air. The yo-yo attached to Alex's belt spun, trailing about 30 yards of specially designed nylon cord. The pointed head of the harpoon buried itself in the underbelly of the plane. Alex felt himself almost being torn in half as he was yanked out of the Jeep on the end of the cord. In seconds, he was 50 yards away from the runway, dangling underneath the plane. His Jeep swerved, out of control. The two oncoming cars tried to avoid it and failed. Both of them hit in a three-way head-on collision. There was an explosion, a ball of flame, and a fist of gray smoke that followed Alex up, as if trying to seize him. A moment later, there was another explosion. The third car had been traveling too fast. It plowed into the burning wrecks, flipped over, and then continued, screeching along the runway on its back before it, too, burst into flame. Alex saw little of this. He was suspended underneath the plane by a single thin white cord, twisting around and around as he was carried even farther into the air. The wind was rushing past him, battering his face and deafening him. He couldn't even hear the propellers just above his head. The belt was cutting into his waist. He could hardly breathe. Desperately, he scrabbled for the yo-yo and found the control he wanted. A single button. He pressed it, and the tiny, powerful motor inside the yo-yo began to turn. The yo-yo rotated on his belt, pulling in the cord. Very slowly, an inch at a time, Alex was drawn up towards the plane. End quote. I know that was a long one, but that had a lot of big, cool moments that I felt would be doing a disservice just, like, summarizing them.
One of the things I was thinking about this entire time is Alex is basically an Attack on Titan character.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. The way he's, like, flying up there and this sort of, like, harpoon slingshot thing, It's kind of nifty, honestly.
Yeah, it's very Attack on Titan, and I don't know. It had, like, Alex shooting the harpoon, dangling from the plane, the explosion of the cars, Alex being cool, having cool moments.
Cool guys don't look at explosions.
Yeah. For real! Oh my gosh, because I didn't see any of it. Wow, Alex is so cool. And then Alex being, like, pulled up from his gadget, it just, like, ties in a lot of cool aspects, and I think along with, like, the Man of War and the Crusher and the Killing Field, this is one of the really cool action scenes in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to explain action succinctly, especially for me, so I had to read quotes for big chunks like this.
It's one of the moments where it's, like, the way it's worded, you can tell a lot is happening, but until you visualize it, it's really hard to see, like, how exciting the moment is.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know. It was really cool rereading this because I don't remember a whole lot from this first book. And so I was like,
yeah,
it's weird how excited I got when I was like reading it. And I was like, wow, I actually feel nervous. And like,
look at him go.
Because I don't know. I feel like when I first read these books, I didn't really connect with that emotion as much. And so now I'm reading it and I'm like, oh my God, he's so cool. So, and I'm like now 6 years older than him, and I'm like, wow, you're so cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, and Alex is close enough to the door on the back of the plane that he can reach for the handle and climb in, but Alex really struggles to open the door because he's got his like feet dangling under him, he's battered up from the wind, and it's hard for him to see because his eyes are tearing up. But eventually he gets the door open and he clambers in and looks down to see the fire, and it is so small that the fires already look like match heads. That's how far up they are. And Alex takes out his gun that he stole and walks and walks from where he is to the pilot seat. There's also like no cargo in the plane except for some lumps that look vaguely familiar to Alex. The pilot turns around and Alex sees it's Mr. Grin. Gasp! Alex is close enough to point the gun at Mr. Grin and demand he take Alex to the Science Museum in South Kensington, London. If you don't know where that is, it's close to the heart of London, so the middle of London. And Alex has to yell over the plane and wind noise. Alex threatens to shoot Mr. Grin if he tricks Alex, and to finish out the chapter, I'll be reading the last lines. Quote, "If you think you're trying to trick me, I'll put a bullet in you. Do you understand?" Mr. Grin said nothing. Alex fired the gun. The bullet slammed into the floor just beside Mr. Grin's foot. Mr. Grin stared at Alex, then nodded slowly. He reached out and turned the joystick. The plane dipped and began to head north. End quote. End chapter.
There's one thing I want to say that I think you might have noted, but you might not have. This moment is the near opposite version of when Mr. Grin threw the knife at Alex and almost clipped the neck. You know, barely clipped the neck, because now the table has turned where Mr. Grin can't move and is being intimidated by death.
Yeah.
And after he had just done that to Alex.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought
a bit of karmic retribution.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So Alex is going to the Science Museum, but will he make it in time? How will he get off the plane? So many questions we can answer.
In
we
the
read
next episode.
The last two chapters of Stormbreaker next week.
Ooh-wee.
So next week we will be covering the last two chapters, chapters 16 and 17. So it'll be an episode you don't want to miss. Make sure you tune in. And our code word for this week is harpoon. So if you're listening, let us know by dropping the code word when you see Nathan or me. This is Ride or Die signing out. End of transmission.
Goodbye, goodbye. Hey, my bell, we got the old world ahead and the old world behind. Old world ahead and the old world behind. Old world ahead and the old world behind. You're the whole world and the world is mine.